This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Once again, the U.S. is on the verge of a railroad shutdown. More than 100,000 workers across the country could be on strike as soon as December 9th. Their grievances revolve around flexible scheduling and sick leave. They've been working without a contract since January of 2020. When we last talked about this back in October, union leaders and railroad management had just reached a tentative agreement to avert a strike. Since then, however, four out of a dozen unions that represent rail workers have voted down those agreements. If one of those unions calls a strike, it would bring the vast majority of the country's railroad system to a halt and throw a wrench into America's supply chain. It would be the first nationwide rail shutdown in three decades, and it would have a profound effect on Illinois, the only state to have all seven North American Class I railroads within its borders in some form. But the federal government can, and likely would, step in to cut short any strike. Just last night, President Biden called on Congress to force adoption of the agreement reached between the railroads and union leaders earlier this year. The Association of American Railroads, which represents the companies, not the workers, has joined in that call. Joining us now to talk about what's happening, why it's happening, and where the negotiations go from here is Bill Stevens. Again, he's a correspondent for Trains Magazine. He covers freight, and he's based in Massachusetts. Bill, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thanks, Brian. It's good to be here.
Also with us is Gregory DeYoung. He's an associate professor of operations management at Southern Illinois University Carbondale. And he's currently working to establish a center for supply chain management and logistics within the university's College of Business and Analytics. Greg, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to have a chance to speak with you.
Listeners, as ever, we want to invite you into our brisk conversation today. If you have a question about the dispute involving rail workers and railroads, let us know. 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Bill, I want to begin with you. Can you briefly remind us of what is at stake here? What are the grievances of the rail workers?
Well, initially, before a presidential emergency board came out with its recommendations over the summer, the railroaders wanted raises, which they've been working without since the old contract lapsed at the end of 2019. And they also wanted some working conditions changes. They feel that they've been working through the pandemic, not really recognized as frontline employees, and that they deserve more money. They want also more flexibility in their schedules. Railroading's a 24/7, 365 outdoor sport. So many of the jobs are also 24/7, 365, and the schedules are unpredictable. They want the ability to take more time off. And they also, some of the unions have been requesting more paid sick time. The unions would argue that they don't get paid sick time. The railroads would tell you that's not true, and they've negotiated better paid sick leave rather than short-term sick time, and that's a matter that should be negotiated between individual railroads and individual unions, not a part of national collective bargaining. And the Presidential Emergency Board agreed with that. And so far, eight of the 12 unions representing rail workers have ratified their tentative agreements that were based on that Presidential Emergency Board's recommendations.
But the four that haven't, I mean, let's talk about how this came down, because these agreements were reached between union leaders and the railroads, right? I mean, why might the membership of the unions have rejected those agreements?
That's an interesting question, and I think it goes to, in some cases, workers are angry and frustrated. You know, they've seen a wave of layoffs since 2017, and they feel they're doing more work because of that, and they're required. The attendance policies, they say, at some of the railroads have been made tighter and more restrictive, and they just say that the contract agreements don't go far enough on those working conditions. Some of them also have questioned the raises and whether those are enough to keep up with cost of living increases, particularly as we're seeing higher inflation. But mostly, I think it's frustration, and the labor management relationship has really soured over the past 5-6 years, and it's worse now than labor leaders would tell you any time in their careers, which have been decades.
Yeah, and we can, I mean, I would urge listeners, if you want a more detailed description of that or discussion of that, go back and listen to some of our past conversations on this, because we can talk about precision railroading and why that's come about. But Greg DeYoung, let me bring you into the conversation. Anything you want to add on the, you know, sort of the concerns of railroaders' perspective or the railroads themselves, management's perspective about where things stand?
Well, I think a really good read on the railway workers themselves is if you look at the individual votes, and it's very, there's a lot of levels to the voting. So in the contract negotiation or the contract ratification, there were 8 of 12 unions that approved the contract. And if you look at the individual votes within the unions themselves, it was really close. So there were a lot of 52-48 type votes. There was not a real solid, wow, this is the contract that we're going to reject, or this is a contract we're going to accept at 70 or 80% approval levels. It was a really close vote. So there's a lot of ambivalence within the unions themselves. And then, of course, if you look at the four unions that did reject, they represent over half of the workers. So there's a real mixed opinion going on in the voting on the contract itself, and that's shown up with the different coalitions within the unions as well.
Well, that's a good segue into, Bill, something you mentioned in a story last week, which is that turnout reached records in some of these union votes around these potential agreements. What does that say about the state of affairs here?
Well, I think it says that railroaders are very interested in this. And just like any election, when voters are motivated, they go to the polls. And that's the same situation here in the unions. And as was mentioned, these votes are you know, razor thin margins that I don't recall seeing before, that tight. You know, 53% of engineers, locomotive engineers, backed their tentative contract. Conductors who sit on the opposite side of the locomotive cab with them, it was 50.5% voted to reject. So, just razor thin. And I think that definitely shows the contentious nature of labor relations these days.
If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about, again, the possibility of a nationwide railway strike. The president has called on Congress to force adoption of the agreement reached between railroads and union leaders earlier this year. The Association of American Railroads has joined in that call. We're talking about all this with Bill Stevens, who's a correspondent for Trains Magazine, and Gregory DeYoung, Associate Professor of Operations Management at Southern Illinois University Carbondale. And Greg, let me ask you to talk a little bit. We've talked on this show about other aspects of supply chain problems, including low water levels on some of the nation's waterways and how that's affected people. Talk about how the railroads fit into that bigger picture and how that could go bad here.
Oh, absolutely. So the railroads are a very big part of the picture, and it's a very interrelated picture now. We've seen a tremendous growth in intermodal transportation. And even when it's not intermodal, there's a real serious situation where there's a lot of handoffs that occur. And whenever there's a breakdown in any of the chains, then the handoffs don't work out very well. So right now in St. Louis, there's a handoff from the grain trains to the barges going down the Mississippi River. And if either side of that breaks, then the farmed grains won't move and the export market starts to have trouble. So it's really tied very closely together. And if you look at railroads themselves, they cover or haul about 30% of the freight, depending on how you measure that. So if you measure that in terms of ton miles, railroads are looking at about 30% of the nation's freight. But that doesn't mean that only 30% of products spend time on a train. Probably more like 90% of products spend some of their time on the trains. If you watch any train go by, there are a tremendous number of intermodal carriers containers or actual trucks traveling on the trains. And with a truck driver shortage and low water on the Mississippi, we're kind of in a bad conjunction of circumstances for our transportation network, because all of the slack that the other carriers may have is really not available at this particular time. So a rail strike would really be a problem.
All right, so let's talk about what our possible futures are here, Bill. Where do things stand in terms of what the president has called for? I saw somebody tweeting this morning that Speaker Pelosi has said the House will put a bill on rail worker agreements on the floor tomorrow morning, is possibly as early as 9 a.m. But I also saw a Republican Senator Marco Rubio saying that he won't vote for something that doesn't have the support of the railway workers. Where do things stand in terms of what the federal government is doing here?
Yeah, you've described the situation well. It does seem to be in flux and updates every hour or so. Bernie Sanders from Vermont has raised concerns, saying that he doesn't want to vote for anything that doesn't include more paid time off for rail workers. And there's been concerns on both sides of the aisle about what exactly to do. Traditionally, when things have come to a head and there has been a strike, Congress steps in, and they often do one of two things. One is order the unions and the railroads back to the bargaining table under a new cooling off period, or they simply impose the recommendations of a presidential emergency board. And that the latter is what the Biden administration is requesting. And rail shippers really want this to happen sooner rather than later, because in some instances, railroads in the days leading up to a strike will start restricting what type of shipments they'll handle. Chemical shipments, for example, hazardous materials, perishables. So that unpredictability is bad for supply chains. The raw materials that go into manufactured items, retailers are afraid about what this could mean for shipments as they move inventory around. So it's a big concern for shippers and the economy.
Well, and Greg, that's a good segue into, we already saw some of those effects beginning to play out as there was anticipation of a shutdown a couple months ago. Let's say if there is a strike in December, what effect would that have on people going into the holiday season and, in terms of shopping or maybe getting gifts where they need to be?
Well, at this point, the retail shopping really wouldn't be affected too much. In fact, if you look at retail inventories, they're at least recent historical records in terms of the amount of product that's actually on the shelves at retailers right now. Partly in response to the supply chain problems we've seen, the retailers certainly had to understand and react to those by increasing their inventories. So for this Christmas shopping, if you're going to go out to the store this week and do your shopping, really whether or not there's a rail strike is not going to have a major effect on you. But down the road, certainly on resupply, that's going to be a problem. And probably the bigger issue right now for Christmas would be shipments of Amazon and other type packages, because a lot of those wind up traveling on trains as well. So even if you are shopping on an Amazon supplier that's domestic, you're probably going to get at least some of your shipment coming on a train at a portion of its journey. And so then you have the potential, if there actually is a strike, to have those problems crop up.
Just a few minutes left in our conversation, Greg. What about the thousands of Illinoisans, human transportation on trains? What would a strike mean for them?
Well, absolutely. That's a concern as well. Because Amtrak has so much of its mileage on freight rails and doesn't actually own the actual rails themselves. In the Northeast, it's more Amtrak-owned track, but throughout the rest of the country, and especially in Illinois, the Amtrak trains are traveling on freight rails. And if there is a strike, they have to stop. There are no signalmen, there's no maintenance. It's just not a feasible situation for the trains to run. And so what you see is, especially with the longer distance Amtrak trains, they'll stop 4 or 5 days before a potential strike, because they don't want to strand people out on the West Coast with no way to get back home. So that would start within probably 4 or 5, even 6 days of a potential strike. Within 2 or 3 days, they're going to stop the Illinois service because, again, they don't want people stranded. They don't want trains stranded. They don't want their workers stranded in a distant location. And so just from a planning standpoint, if the strike looks to be even relatively certain, they're going to start to curtail service pretty quickly with Amtrak.
Bill, just a minute or so left. What are you keeping an eye on in the coming hours and days?
I guess it's the timing of everything. And then once this does get resolved, and it will get resolved one way or another, there is a concern that some railroaders, train crews, which are already in short supply, will pocket the money that they're owed in terms of back pay and bonuses, and then either retire or leave in search of other work, which would only exacerbate ongoing crew shortages. So that's something to watch for down the road.
And this is something that, I mean, the trucking industry is sort of notorious for churning through workers. Is that is anyone predicting that possibility for rail? I mean, is this really no longer a good, solid, you know, middle-class job that it used to be, for example, for my father in the past?
I think it depends on who you talk to. Certainly, the wages, you know, an average of $160,000 when benefits are included, are very good. But there's kind of a misery component in there for train crews, signal maintainers, track workers who have to travel and be out and don't get to sleep in their own beds every night, and have unpredictable schedules. And people now, I guess, are questioning, is that misery pay enough, or do I want to, you know, have different priorities and have a better work-life balance?
Yeah, work-life balance in all things. All right, Bill Stevens is a correspondent with Trains Magazine. Gregory DeYoung is Associate Professor of Operations Management at Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. Bill, Greg, thanks so much for being with us to talk through this morning.
You're very welcome. Very nice speaking with you.
You're welcome, and look forward to chatting again.
All right. Thank you both. Coming up after a short break, it's Giving Tuesday. We're going to listen back to some of the most memorable conversations we had this year as we ask you to support this public radio station. It's the 21st Show. Stay with us.